we were really happy with how the Citizens' Assembly actually framed the question. So the question to the Assembly wasn't, does climate change exist or not? It was actually, well, how can the state play a role in tackling climate change? So it was very much, this is happening, what are we going to do? But also I think that some of the events that have been, some of the weather patterns that have been happening across the world, not only have we seen 500 people displaced in County Donegal as a result of extreme weather over a very short period of time, we've also seen very intense hurricanes happening in the Caribbean, impacting on some really vulnerable, poor communities in Puerto Rico, Caribbean islands, absolutely.
And I heard that those hurricanes, they may happen anyway, but they were ferocious and lasted longer because the sea had heated up by 1.5 degrees.
Absolutely, and I think that's really important to understand that climate change is, it's an amplifier. It's an amplifier in terms of amplifying things that are going to happen anyway, but also amplifying, I suppose, social inequalities in society and amplifying kind of social risks. So I suppose the poorer communities are a lot more at risk of the impacts of really intense storms. And it's a lot more difficult for poorer communities to rebuild and just get on with their everyday lives.
And also to get the attention that they need, because I was speaking to a friend of mine last night who has 3 houses in Florida, very upmarket area, but she mentioned that 25 miles away in the part of Naples where they are, that the really poor black community who were living in trailers were just wiped out, sewage, everything, everywhere. Yeah. And in Puerto Rico, which is an American state, they have no electricity, and they're still, if that had been, she said, like a really posh upmarket area, there would have been action immediately and they would have been looked after, whereas they are poor, they are Puerto Ricans, and nobody really cares.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And unfortunately, a lot of the media focus tends to look at problems that we can relate to in the Western world, so to speak. So, for example, as the hurricanes were happening in the Caribbean, we also had very intense flooding in parts of India, Bangladesh, where thousands of people were actually killed. And we didn't see that same focus on social media or on the news. One of the things that we highlight in our submission is that climate justice is very much at the core of the government taking action, and that would involve increasing the amount of finance that we give to the Green Climate Fund. That's a fund that was set up to help people who are much more exposed to the impacts of climate change to mitigate and then also to adapt to the impacts as they unfold.
And why is it that it does seem to be that the poor suffer disproportionately? I mean, partly in the Naples situation, it was because the way that the hurricane tipped at the very end, and you sort of feel the hand of God couldn't spare the poorest of the poor, if that's your vision of God. At the same time, there are other reasons as well, aren't there, that the poor suffer disproportionately, and that's why your submission was linked to justice.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I suppose, first of all, poorer communities tend to have smaller carbon footprints. You've probably less money to be taking foreign holidays or to own properties in parts of the Mediterranean or whatever. So the carbon footprint is less. But I suppose in terms of how we plan in society, when you look at, say, urban planning, poorer communities are often just more in crowded kind of situations, have less resources. Poorer communities may not even be able to avail of house insurance, for example. That's a problem even here in Ireland, that if you're exposed to flooding, you may not even be able to afford insurance. You may not be able to get it. You may not have health insurance. So it's those kind of inequalities that exist anyway. But when you're exposed to really intense storms or weather patterns, if you're living in a tent or a caravan, or, you know, your ability to rebuild your life, you might be unemployed. You know, so it's so much more difficult to really rebuild your life.
And then on a wider issue, we see deforestation and native peoples being moved, and they've no say, they've no power. Big business comes in, takes over their land, aided and abetted by a government that has been paid off. And then that has a knock-on effect on the climate. Like they say, the tsunami in Sri Lanka a number of years ago, the devastation was worse because the poor fishermen had been moved off the front part of the land, and the whole ecosystem had changed, and the early warning systems of the birds who would normally fly away, who weren't in the trees, wasn't there. And that was, even though it was a natural disaster, it was exacerbated by all those facts, and that the poor again suffered.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's it. And I think that's really important in terms of our understanding of climate change, is that it amplifies all these social inequalities that already exist. We really need to take those social inequalities into account so that it's a much more even playing field in terms of people's ability to adapt and to rebuild their lives.
So that's what you were basically saying in the submission from the Jesuit Centre for Faith and Justice. Anything else that you want the government to take on board?
We also recommended that the government first needs to do its fair share. It's very difficult for the government to become a leader if we're not even doing our fair share. And at the moment, we're actually way off track in terms of meeting our 2020 targets. And it looks quite challenging for us to be meeting our 2030 targets. So these targets, they're essentially EU targets that we have to meet in terms of our emissions across a number of sectors. And we are one of only 5 EU countries which won't meet its 2020 targets. We have an overall 2050 target of an 80% emissions across a number of sectors. And we're nowhere near even achieving that, even though it's only 30 years away, which is not a very, very long time in terms of trying to really radically change how we organise society or how we go about doing our everyday business.
So are you hopeful then that the Citizens' Assembly can make an impact if the government doesn't seem to be even afraid of the EU and sanctions, and serious sanctions at that?
Yeah, I am, I suppose. There are a number of good signs or good signals. So, for example, this year we've had a national mitigation plan. The government's also implementing a national dialogue on climate action, which is all about facilitating discussion and debate across Irish society and trying to maximise consensus. So that's a good sign. We would argue, though, that we really need to have that strong political leadership. That's key. That's something that even like Pope Francis acknowledges in Laudato Si, that strong political leadership is really essential in tackling these problems.
And in that regard, is it there, do you think? I mean, the Green Party were pretty much devastated at the last election, but they seem to be coming back again in terms of councillors. Do you see it with the major parties? Do you think that the green agenda is an issue for them?
Certainly within the National Mitigation Plan, we would have expressed a concern that there is very much a wait and see approach.
Now, what is that? Because this is one thing I think is a bit disturbing about the whole climate change debate. The language used is very alienating. You know, a national mitigation plan, that speaks nothing to me.
Yeah.
And I'm sure to loads of other people. I don't know what that means. It could be anything.
Yes. Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think that's really one of the challenges, is how we communicate around something that's complex, something that's about science, but also something that's about moral responsibility, ethical responsibility, that's about human development. And I think we need to get the language right. And unfortunately, maybe the policy world has been quite poor at this. I think maybe this is why the Citizens' Assembly received so many submissions, because they made it easy. You just went online, you typed your submission into a box, and you clicked enter. Whereas with government submissions, for example, it can be very daunting, and it can be very alienating to the general public.
What is a national mitigation plan?
So the national mitigation plan is essentially, it should be a plan that will guide society towards reducing the amount of emissions that it outputs. So it should be
So keeping the air cleaner.
Essentially, keeping the air cleaner, keeping less emissions in the air, in the atmosphere, across a number of sectors. So transport, for example, across the residential sector, across the energy, so how we produce our energy.
Do you think the Pope's Laudato Si has made an impact? I know Donald Trump didn't seem to read it since he went away and a week later pulled out of the Paris Accord. Do you think it has made an impact?
I think in terms of the rhetoric, it has. In terms of actual behaviour and commitment, I'm not so sure. Certainly when the encyclical came out, there was so much focus on the document among religious organisations and among secular groups. and secular commentators, and it was received favourably, and I think that was really, really exciting. And I think it's kind of put Pope Francis as being this figure that we now listen to, that when the Pope has something to say, we listen, the media pick up on it, there's usually discussion, and I think that's really, really powerful. Now, and I know Enda Kenny, for example, has acknowledged Pope Francis in the Dáil and the work that he's done. But translating that then into the kind of ambitious policy context, that's the hard part. And, you know, for me, the encyclical is all about economics rather than the environment, how we organise ourselves economically. And I think maybe some people see the encyclical as about, oh, it's about climate change. It's really so much more than that. And as much as I think it's really put Francis as a main kind of spokesperson on environmental issues, I am slightly worried that maybe we've missed the boat a little bit in terms of really understanding what the encyclical is about. It's about how we relate to each other and how we relate to our earth. And that includes all the other species that are on the earth.